Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and this week I'm flying solo. Alas, my accomplice in crime, Manny Barling, is under the weather. I do, however, have our excellent panel. We have well-known attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Simon. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And you're probably going to enjoy the first segment because it will rocket you right back to your trials and tribulations with O.J. Simpson, but more on that in a minute. And of course, no program would be complete without the Terrible Twins. However, one of the Terrible Twins is a little late in calling in. We do have John Perry with us, the owner of Sunset Protection, security and investigation at its very best. John, welcome.
Hey, Simon, I wish I could say I'd glad to be here too, but that would be an embellishment.
And also joining us, although she will only be here for the first part of the program, is the ever lovely Jen Barrett. James Carville, move over. This is the real Raging Cajun. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We have... Hold on, while I attack the switchboard. Is this the infamous Sam Moffey?
All the way, and late but not forgotten.
For those of you not familiar with Sam, he's an interesting character, activist, author, and bar owner. Sam, it's great that you could make it. Is there any truth in the rumor that the Browns might extend their winning streak to two games?
We're going to know by 7:30 tonight that the Browns will get the first two-game winning streak in 11 years. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
They have not won two games in a row for 11 years.
And just so everybody knows, the Browns will be playing the Raiders in probably the least watched game in the NFL slate today.
Not in Youngstown.
Not in Youngstown.
No, in Youngstown they will be watching eagerly the quarterback who for the Steelers, Charlie Batts, who's about 37 going on 73, play for the Steelers. Because if the Steelers don't... The Ravens have the Steelers right where they want them, and that's the big thing about here. Will the Steelers defense do something to help their free fall? So,
you know,
that's ESPN from Poland.
I just support the Chargers. They don't do any harm. That their golf game improves every year because. But they get booted out early. you people take your football way too seriously. Okay, we have lots of stories to cover this week. And I want to start with the Casey Anthony story. This case just never seems to end. It truly is the gift that keeps on giving. I think it's fair to say that most people with an IQ that exceeds their hat size view the Casey Anthony trial as an absolute travesty of justice. She did indeed get away with murder. For that reason, I did invite Jan to join us for this segment because she knows just about as much about this case as anyone on the planet. So, Jen, tell us about the latest revelation, Baez and the computer forensics.
Yeah, apparently the prosecution missed out on a very important thing that they found on her computer, where someone did a search for foolproof suffocation. But, of course, the word suffocation was misspelled. And it was, according to the records, it showed that it was made on a password-protected site. And according to, it was not only that, I get twisted on my words here, but it was done on Firefox and not on the search engine that they did the search for whenever the investigators were investigating it. It wasn't on Internet Explorer, it was on Firefox. And according to the way the timing that they had on it, that it was after George had already testified that he had went to work. And I'm not sure about this, but they say that he had clocked in at a certain time, and it was while he couldn't possibly be in two places at one time. But she had done the search for foolproof suffocation, and then they went on and said that she had went, I mean, that there was a search for other things after that, too.
Peter, I have to ask you, because, you know, you are a trial lawyer. I mean, how on earth could the prosecution have missed this? I mean, why, you know, they had experts. Why didn't they, use a computer geek that actually understood computers?
You know, it's a very interesting question, and I actually think John might be able to give us a lot of insight into this as well. You know, the simple fact of the matter is you look everywhere you can, and it's both police and prosecutors who are conducting the investigation of these types of things. And I don't know how they missed this, and I think most people hear something like this. The truth is people are human. And in every scenario where you have everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
In every scenario where you have human beings doing anything, there are errors. And it's hard to say if somebody was, asleep at the switch on this one or if there were other factors that contributed to it. But, you know, we talked about the OJ trial before, and there were a whole host of human errors that plagued that. I'd be interested to hear John's take on it, but the bigger question is also, would it have made a difference? And, having been in many trials, I tend to think that during the trial experience, so much stuff comes out, and I think the jury gets the picture. I think they get a full sense and a full flavor of whatever it is that happened here. And my question isn't so much how did they miss this, but would it have mattered? And I really don't know what the jury was thinking in the Casey Anthony trial, but I'm just not sure that this evidence would have made a difference. And I know that seems amazing, but I have questions about that. But it is an interesting issue how they missed this. Because the search that was conducted on the same day that the baby was last seen alive, and Casey Anthony's defense at trial was that the child died, drowning in a pool.
Excellent.
And this search basically revealed evidence of arguably the mental state or the intent of Casey Anthony to kill the baby, because it indicates that Casey Anthony conducted a search on basically how to kill someone and make it look like suffocation.
John, I have to ask you, I know that that this isn't a case that, you know, you followed particularly closely, but just in general terms, do you get involved with computer forensics?
Well, at the station level, they're not expert in it. It would have to go downtown for, you know, somebody with expertise in that area. But I will say, I wasn't surprised to read that, because a lot of my friends are detectives, and for years, I always used to joke with them. It's developed into a sinecure position, similar to the teaching profession. Simon, that means essentially that people are well compensated for little effort or responsibility. I wasn't surprised that he ran once the term suffocation, misspelled it, and moved on, because if he's anything like my friends, he probably had an appointment to be measured for his golf clubs.
a brutal comment, John.
Accuracy in media, Simon.
Sam, you did follow the story a little bit. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, I could see a defense not having the money to go through discovery and hire a computer geek, as you said, to you know, depositions and all that, to miss something that you know, against the state, you know, because the state has, you know. But in this case, what's really strange is Peter is, and you have pointed out, and Jan, is that, you know, the state has all the money, all the time, all the investigators, and everything going for it in a big trial like this. You would think they would have laid it out there, and but they didn't, for whatever reason. Maybe Peter's right. They forgot, human error. They thought they were losing it anyway. I mean, I'm just amazed that people would Google something like that. I mean, what's next? You know, how to commit adultery and not get caught? I mean, is that going to be a Google? I just can't. I can't believe that sort of stuff is on there, but I guess it is on the web.
They claim that whenever they gave them the list of words to look up, to Google, I mean, to check for the search, that they were never given the word foolproof. And that's why they claim that they didn't find it. But Baez had the knowledge of it. He knew it was on there. So apparently his investigators found it. So it is a question about that.
Well, that's interesting, because as I was reading accounts of this computer evidence, you know, Baez appeared to indicate that he knew about this evidence, and that indicates to me that everybody knew about this evidence, and for some reason the prosecutors just basically didn't believe that this evidence was very probative, and that sometimes happens as well.
You know, talk about it in his book.
Okay, here's the deal, and I'm not trying to turn geeky on everyone, but there were two internet browsers on the computer, and one was Internet Explorer, which comes preloaded with Windows, and the other is one called Firefox. Some of the news reports are saying that the investigators only looked at the Internet Explorer data, totally ignored Firefox, and Firefox was the browser of choice by Casey. I mean, this is a huge error.
Yeah, it is clearly an error, in my opinion, not to have introduced this evidence at trial. I mean, prosecutors clearly got a duty to get this evidence in front of a jury. What the jury does with it after that is up to the jury, but it clearly is an error to not get this evidence in front of the jury. It's very telling of the defendant's state of mind. And I you know, I don't know how they missed this. Lawyers dealing with computers has become a real tough topic in the last, 10 to 15 years, I would say. There has just been a great swell of information. You know, in civil litigation here in California, we call this e-discovery, which stands for electronic discovery. But many lawyers aren't really comfortable with electronic discovery and doing things on computers and searching for that. And many lawyers really favor hard evidence, evidence that they're comfortable handling and that they're comfortable working with, like documents, pictures, things like that. And I don't know why they didn't do a better job of scouring the electronic evidence for this kind of stuff. It clearly should have been detected and brought to light.
Okay, Jen, on a slightly different Casey Anthony deal, the Zenaida Gonzalez civil case is kind of on hold, pending an appeal.
Uh-huh.
All right. What is the appeal?
Well, it's from where she was charged with the four lies. They're appealing that, saying that the charges should be bundled up into one instead of the four charges. And as long as she's got this open like that, she can go in and plead the fifth, and so she won't have to answer any questions. So they got the civil case postponed until after her appeal goes through to see what's going to happen there.
Okay, Peter, you're the obvious man on the point here. And she is appealing a conviction that the time has already been served. This was part of the criminal case. Why the hell would you want to open it back up again? You know, the judge gave her time served and time for good behavior. Why on earth would you appeal it?
Well, I don't know a lot about this situation, and there could be a lot of motivations for appealing it. You may just feel that the evidence didn't support the conviction at all, even though you essentially got a light penalty as a result of it. But I'd like to find out a little bit more about this, because I've not really been following this issue. What was she convicted of?
It's four lies, including about her daughter being missing to begin with, and then about her being the nanny taking the child, and about her having a job at Universal Studios. And she told the cops, whenever this all happened, that she had received a phone call, I think it was July 15th, that she told them that she talked to her daughter.
Right, and somebody said that there's a civil lawsuit as well. What's the name of the civil lawsuit?
Right, Zenaida Gonzalez, right. They were scheduled to go in court next month on that, but they got a postponement because of this appeal.
Well, I could see a very good reason for the criminal appeal then. What's she being sued for civilly?
Because Zenaida is saying defamation, I think, because of... It ruined her name because she was named as the nanny, and
so one of the things.
Nothing.
One of the things that happens is every person has a Fifth Amendment right not to testify in any way against themselves, and it often happens. For instance, again, hate to use this example, but in O.J. Simpson, O.J. Simpson was criminally prosecuted and then acquitted, and then he was sued civilly. And in the civil lawsuit, they took O.J.'s deposition. And, most people aren't really aware of that, but O.J. did testify about all these matters, and they have deposition transcripts regarding all of it. And if O.J. was still facing the threat of criminal prosecution, he could have asserted a Fifth Amendment privilege in his civil lawsuit and refused to testify. But since the prosecution had ended and there was no longer any criminal threat of prosecution, he no longer had a Fifth Amendment, and therefore he was forced to testify in the civil proceeding. It was
draped in all kinds of confidential protective orders, but he was forced to testify. So if she's bringing a civil lawsuit, and for whatever reason she does not yet want to testify regarding these matters, then one of the ways to, in effect, create a delay or postpone her testimony or make it so she doesn't have to testify immediately is to prolong the criminal case and then shield herself behind that and say, there's still a chance I may have a criminal issue here, so I'm going to refuse to testify.
Well, that's what I say, that they're doing it to keep from her having to testify because she does not want to testify at all, and she's wants to plead
well, it's
the
very,
on it.
It's a strange thing because usually if you're a plaintiff in a civil lawsuit, you know, you have to testify, but also, you know, you presumably want your day in court. You want to get the case moving along, and so it's a situation here where a plaintiff doesn't want to testify. And I don't know.
She's the defendant.
Is she the defendant? Because I thought Jen just said she was suing for defamation.
No. Zenaida Gonzalez is suing her for defamation.
I see. Suing Casey Anthony.
Right.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Casey doesn't want to testify. She won't answer any questions. She pled the fifth before. Whenever they done the.
All right. So it's a delay tactic to prevent Casey from having to commit to any kind of testimony. And as long as the threat or the specter of criminal prosecution still floats around out there, then in theory she can shield herself with the Fifth Amendment protection.
Well,
eventually, it goes away.
Yeah, they said that she, if she loses the appeal, they're just going to take it to a higher court, so they're going to keep it in appeals court as long as they have to, is what
they
said.
Well, what will happen in these kinds of situations is that, you know, the judge in the civil case will only wait so long, and if it appears it's just going to go on forever, he could order the case to trial, and he'll just say, you know, Casey can't testify. And that means that she can't put on any evidence in defense of the allegations made against her in terms of her testimony.
Well, they have already got the judge to order that there's not supposed to be any mention of the trial at all in the defamation case at all. And then they ordered some of the other stuff there's certain things they can talk about and certain things that they can't bring up at all in court. They have got it. It's so messed up. I don't see how they have a chance even winning by the way that they're admitting, I mean, keeping them from being able to mention anything at all.
Well, if you don't, when you say they don't have a chance of winning, you're talking about Casey Anthony.
No, the other.
You're talking about the plaintiff?
Right, Zenaida Gonzalez.
Well, it's hard to say. I'd need to know a lot more evidence. But anyway, you slice it, it sounds like a delay tactic.
Now, that's the way I say, too, that on Casey's part, I think that her attorneys are doing whatever they can to delay this trial for the defamation, so they won't end up just throwing it out.
Okay. Sam, do you have any final thoughts on the Casey Anthony story?
Where is she, Jan? Do you know? Does anybody know where she's at?
Last reports, I heard that she was in southern Florida in Brevard County, but that's not confirmed, so I don't really know where she's at.
Where is she getting the money to pay for all these lawyers?
That's a good question.
Because Simon sent me an email, we were talking back and forth, and he said, and I remember that Larry sent it off for $1 million to pose nude, and she said no. So she didn't capitalize on any of her newfound 15 minutes of fame after she was found innocent of the murder.
Right.
Didn't get any money. And I'm just listening to you and Peter talking about the appeal, the this and that. That cost big bucks. I mean, I don't think the lawyers are doing it pro bono and all that, and hiring people like John and other people like that. I mean, that's serious dough. And where'd she get the money from?
Well, I don't know, because they claim she's still indigent.
Yeah, a couple of things. We don't know what she's gotten. Simply because one source didn't give her money doesn't mean she didn't get money from another source. Secondly, I would not underestimate the likelihood that attorneys would represent her just for publicity value alone. And you know, you see this a lot, and attorneys are drawn to these high-profile clients because they think it gets them a lot of publicity. So there's always a lawyer out there who will take on her case. Is she being represented on the criminal appeal by the same attorney who defended her at trial?
No. They've got a Green or somebody like that, I forgot what his name was now, is representing her with the civil trial. So. Okay.
Well, I don't know where she's getting the money, but a lot of people have a lot of incentive to take these cases to try to get publicity.
A lot of people send her money. But
yeah.
She claimed when she was on probation that she didn't have any money. She didn't make any money. So it's either that or there has been speculation that her parents gave her money out of that Dr. Phil paid them for the charity that they closed down right afterwards. And
good
I mean,
old Dr.
So
Phil.
Many
he loves this
ways.
Stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Jane, was she indigent? Would the state, would the taxpayers pick up the tab for the criminal trial?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. She was declared indigent during the trial. Whenever the trial, before it went to court, they declared her indigent.
Which was pretty bizarre.
After all that money that ABC paid them and gave to them.
What was it, $200,000?
Yes. And they claimed her indigent. After they blew that money, they brought it in and said, and they left it was behind closed doors where they explained where the money went to. So we didn't.
Well, maybe she's selling autographs. Who knows?
Well, she sold her daughter's pictures, and so did her mom and daddy. They made a fortune off this child. So.
Hey, Peter, do you think that the prosecutor dropped the ball with the e-evidence or whatever e-discovery? Because they thought they had it in the bag and it wasn't going to add to their case? Is that a possibility?
That is a very good question. That is
it,
a very
could
good
be
question.
Possible that let they me, didn't me, want to take it further. I'm sorry, go
well,
ahead.
Well, let me give you a little story about that. You know, when the OJ case was pending down here, you know, one of the most damning pieces of evidence that I heard was the so-called suicide note, which was read publicly while the Bronco chase was going on. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, what was particularly damning about that note is that it sounded like it was written by someone who was guilty, even though he kept saying things like, I'm innocent, I'm innocent. What was particularly damning about it, to my ears, was he never said anything in the note about getting the people who supposedly did do the crime. And to me, the omission of that kind of statement was very damning. And I actually, one of my law school classmates was on that prosecutorial team, and I said, I saw him actually the night before the verdicts. And I said, why didn't you introduce that into evidence? And he said it was felt that the jury would only respond to the statements in the note about how he didn't do it, rather than any argument that there weren't things said that you would have expected to hear from a guilty mind. So prosecutors do make decisions like that, and I think that's a very legitimate question. All attorneys make decisions like that. Sometimes you think your case is good enough without it and that you might just confuse or mislead the jury. I don't know. It's really hard to say without, you know, seeing more and more of the evidence that was introduced and everything that swirled around in that trial. I do still go back to what I said earlier, which is that I think that after a lengthy jury trial, the jury gets the basic sense of everything. And I don't know to what extent items like this are really going to change their mind.
Okay. I think it's time to wrap this segment up. John, unlike you, I actually like food. And I have to send Jan off to the kitchen to make roast potatoes to go with the roast beef.
No, Jan, don't go.
Hey, Simon, before she leaves, I have a couple quick comments.
Sure.
It's just something to consider. It's standard for defendants to appeal or seek to reduce or overturn convictions because it could negatively impact their future career prospects or earnings. Maybe
yeah.
she wants to become an attorney, and this might prevent her from doing so. And also, Jan, I love your East Jersey accent.
East Jersey? I don't think it's anywhere near Jersey. That's an insult to me.
That's okay. I'll get Simon back for it.
Okay, good. Okay, well, it was nice talking with all of y'all, and y'all enjoy the rest of your show.
Okay. I obviously have to bring up Fox TV, Fox News. I mean, what a delightful deal this week. Did any of you see Fox dump Rick's interview?
I saw your email.
John is our Fox expert. I didn't actually see it live, but I read about it.
Right. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, Rick's came out of the starting blocks just ragging on Fox, you know. Well, you know, largely the Benghazi issue is a result of Fox News and your distorted, you know, version about it. You know, Fox is nothing more than a branch of the Republican Party. I loved it. Sam, did you see it or read about it?
I read about it from the emails you sent and whatnot, and I think Fox is going through the same thing that the Republican Party is, and they'll do it faster and quicker because they can. They're just reinventing themselves. You know, they've got to make ratings, they've got to make money, they've got to do all that sort of thing to get advertising. I noticed when I channel surfed this weekend here and there around, is that Fox to me looks like it's getting a CNN type look. You know, they've got the, now they're going to have a health expert, a fitness guru, you know, type of little segments on things other than 24/7 attack the Democratic Party and Barack Obama. And so that's a good thing, I guess. You know, if there's more segments out there about entertainment and food and pop culture, that's what I think you're going to see that. And they're going to be less political. They have to reinvent themselves. You know, they all do. I mean, what's MSNBC going to talk about? What's the, you know, I mean, CNN, to its credit, I think is the leader in having a more diverse networking with all sorts of things going on, and then Sunday make their political show with their, you know, the like today I watched a little of, I really wanted to watch Geithner on Fox and Boehner and listen to what they had to say. So I watched a little of that about the fiscal cliff because I know we'll be talking about that later on. So that's just the great Republican Party. Fox, you know, they blew it. They're going to have to change. They're going to have to change their stripes and you know, to be more in tune with what's going on. And, again, it's all for the ratings, right? It's all about the money, isn't it?
It's all about the money. John, are you loosely in agreement that Fox needs to change their stripes?
Well, if they do, they're going to lose me as a viewer, I'll tell you that. I would appreciate one network trying to keep the government honest. And I think following CNN is a paradigm for failure. If you don't like it, Simon, that's why Eugene Pauly invented the remote control. Watch something that supports the administration, if that's to your liking. But others of us who are suspicious of government want to follow somebody who's trying to keep them honest. And as far as the Benghazi thing, it is important, at least to the families, to find out who murder their relatives, and the cries for help and the requests for additional security, which were denied. And according to that Rick's guy, there's nothing to be concerned about, because even though the assassins are running free, the appropriate party, the filmmaker, is in custody. But a lot of us don't feel that's the end of it.
That's an interesting view of the story, and you bring up several salient points.
Oh, thanks. I stumbled onto a couple, huh?
And Peter, you're our voice of reason.
I don't know if I am, but I try to be. I thought that I agree with what John said, especially the part where he said, if they change, he's not going to watch them anymore. I think Fox understands its audience, and it does what it does because it is aware of its audience, and it caters to its audience, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
At what point do you drop the word news?
That's a very good point. I don't know precisely what passes for news anymore these days. Anyway, it seems to me that the old buyer beware maxim has to apply, and that people all need to make decisions for themselves about what they perceive to be news. John obviously does that. He just made that very clear. He doesn't think that some networks are news. He thinks that other networks are. I don't know when you stop dropping news. I can tell you that as an ex-journalist, I was taught over and over and over again to try to write a story where nobody had any idea who I was. When I was schooled in journalism, they told me that my goal was to completely remove myself from every story other than a byline, and that when the reader read the story, they had absolutely no idea that anybody had even written it, that it was just a seamless transition of the facts to the reader's attention, and then the reader themselves draw their own conclusions. I can tell you that whatever theory that is, it's very hard to do even when you're trying to do it. And I don't think in the battleground to present opposing points of views in our modern culture, I don't even see anybody even trying to do it anymore. And I don't know if that's a bad thing at all. I think people just need to understand who they're getting their news from, and that everything tends to have a slant, and they have to kind of decide for themselves. And if anything, Fox made it very clear to everyone, this is our slant, and this is what, this is our perception. So I don't know when you, quote-unquote, drop the news. I probably, like John and Sam and everybody else, I question what news is anymore anyway. I'm not sure I call anything news anymore, but I do still listen to it.
Peter, let me ask you, don't you think there's no independent arbiter to determine what's news? We all make our own decision. And, Simon, I don't appreciate you speaking for me to determine what you consider news applies to me or anyone else. I think it's typical of your generation, and I wish Manny was here, who developed your philosophy from reading Bazooka Joe bubblegum wrappers. You could call that news, but I don't.
There's a lot of good stuff in those bubblegum wrappers.
No, but some people would say that's a positive influence. I don't.
This discussion is about what constitutes news and how much spin can you put on it. And it seems to me that, if you look at the big three, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, they're all spin machines. They're not showing news. They're showing what they think will sell to advertisers. I don't like that. I want news that is genuinely news.
Yeah, but Simon, the days of Lowell Thomas are gone. The BBC is heavily politicized.
Well, yeah, the Beeb's fine, apart from Jimmy Savile.
Rest his soul.
Right, and let's face it, and you got to give the guy credit. He liked young gals.
How's about that then?
Right.
Now that sounds like news to me. I would like to hear more about that.
I'll Google him. He's all over the internet.
Is he that guy who got accused of with that threesome or something?
No, it's a long story, but
okay. I've said too much.
Probably more like a. Probably more like a thousand.
Simon, I think that, you know, like the days of, you know, I grew up with Walter Cronkite, you know, and or Harry Reid, you know, that whole crowd of great anchor people on, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, who's the other one? David Brinkley. They were all class guys. They seemed to be not biased. They just supported the news, you know, and as it was, I think they all kind of came from the same cloth, too, because they grew up in the, you know, again, I was, Manny was here, and some, you know, to talk about, you know, he saw the news in the 50s and 60s when I was, you know, just growing up, and I remember the Vietnam War being reported. It was factual. And then we had to draw our own conclusions, as I think everybody on the show today agrees, is whatever we watch, we're supposed to draw our own conclusions through our own research.
I mean, no, I don't agree with that, Sam.
You don't? You want,
no,
you
I
want
don't
them
think
to
the news was ever unbiased.
You don't think, I don't think the news,
fact,
you think the news was biased back then?
They wanted a free press.
You think the news was biased back in when we were younger in the 60s and 70s with Cronkite and 60 Minutes, Edward Murrow, a better New York Times, a better Washington Post. There was no competition from the internet. I think the news was much more. I think there were reporters back then. Now we have repeaters. We have repeaters for the Republican line, John, and we have repeaters for the Democratic line or whatever. They're not reporters.
I think
repeaters.
You're being naive.
I don't think so. I don't know. This story here in my local town, I can't speak for yours or Simon's or whatnot, where if you don't do the work, you know, for the reporter, and I mean, literally give it to them, I mean, staple it to their head, they don't go after lazy asses to go report it. They don't. They don't do any investigative work on their own. They don't do anything. And that's like all of, all, you know, Northeast Ohio and Western Pennsylvania. You literally have to do all the work yourself, get them everything, and then maybe they'll go out and do something. They don't want to. They're lazy. They repeat the party line, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And most of the time, John, they repeat the party line because that government is the biggest advertiser they got in the newspapers.
That's
and
my point, Sam. Somebody has to be an adverse press and keep the governments honest, regardless of who's in power.
Yeah, and I'm not debating that. I don't think Fox does. I mean, you're not naive to say that Fox is culture down the line. I mean, you think that they would be? If when Bush was president, I mean, come on, they were cheerleaders.
No, that's not true.
I think so.
I watched the trial more than you did, and they criticized.
Well, probably. Probably, but I just don't trust the media. I mean, the media to me is, and McLuhan was right, the media is the message. But the problem is, you know, they're lock, stock, and, you know, they're locked arms with the politician. Bill Clinton was a genius. And one of the things he did, and I think you guys might, when they used to have those White House dinners and the parties and whatnot, him and his wife started inviting all the media people to these dinners, the White House dinners, this and that. So they'd have a dinner for the president of France, and they'd invite media people, reporters. So pretty soon these reporters, and if the reporters wrote nice things about the Clintons, they kept getting invited to these parties and dinners and whatnot. And if they didn't, you know, they were out. Well, what reporter wouldn't want to go to a White House dinner with the president of France or George Clooney or, you know, Angelina Jolie or whatnot? And I think that's been carried on. I mean, we have a, you know, like, the media and government at all levels, you know, there's no Woodward Bernstein, and I don't know any reporters out there wanting to be a Woodward Bernstein. They'd rather, repeat whatever they're told to do, less work, get a high salary, and go from there.
And you need to watch Fox more. There's a lot of good reporters.
I've watched Fox, John, during the election, and right now I'm not watching. I channel surf for a little bit. I'm sick of Fox. I'm sick of MSNBC. I'm sick of CNN. I'm sick of politics and of all that stuff right now. And I seem to be. I have more fun getting it online from various sources all around the world and whatnot. And what I'm doing even more of is reading very interesting blogs and commentary and opinions by respected people from all walks of life that I wouldn't get on Fox, I wouldn't get on CNN, and I wouldn't get on MSNBC or ABC or whatnot. You can tell who's paying. You can tell who's buttering the bread. And I could write Bill O'Reilly's show. I could write Piers Morgan's squad. I mean, anybody could once you watch them because you know who's buttering the bread. You know who the advertisers are. Those are the ones you got to stay away from.
It's very interesting. Journalism, however you define it, I don't even know if it's called journalism anymore, has changed drastically in the last 20 or 30 years, and that's almost entirely due to television. And, it is a big difference, in my opinion, between, print journalists, so-called newspaper journalists, and television so-called journalists. And I think even when you're a print journalist, you want to interject parts of yourself into the news that you cover. You don't. It's very hard as a human being to just be that kind of transparent messenger. And they have to fight the challenge all the time to sensationalize and make the story big so that, in effect, they're important. They're the one breaking the story. They're the big star. But those pressures are magnified 10 to 100 fold, in my opinion, when you start having televised news the way we have it now. When I watch television news now, if I ever do, to me it all seems like it's acting. It all seems like actors, and they're all trying to play roles, and they're all trying they're saying things and making it look and sound like the news, but each and every one of them just wants to promote their own individual career. And I don't even know if they're that
That's
all
choice.
They care about. That's all they
but
care
Bill
about.
O'Reilly
they just want to be movie
well,
stars.
Promote the news. I agree with you, Peter. That's an excellent observation. My son is at SUNY, City University. John, don't get mad. He's at SUNY New York School of Journalism, and he's been there for about 4 months. Yes, it's very liberal. It's so liberal-leaning. He's been able to – he found himself going into the sports, and he's having kind of found his niche. He's reporting for the Brooklyn Nets and all that. He's getting some stories in the New York Times and all that. And he, after 3 months of being there, and he was so happy that he got into the sports end of it, because now he could be more factual. And you see what you do. He said he could not believe those in his class that wanted to be news reporters on television or, as you said, print reporters, Peter, or blog reporters or whatnot, are so biased in the thinking already, you can't convince them anyway. And their story writing and their storytelling is already slanted at a young age of 21, 22. And so he's just happy that he gets into sports and he'll be able to be more factual because, you can't lie. You can't slant who won the game, right? It's how they won the game you can slant.
Well, I think there's a lot of slanting that goes on in sports reporting, but at least it's limited to we have this game, this was the score, and you can start taking it's a little bit more blow by blow, but I just see for the most part I see people who are actors and not in sports reporting per se, but when I watch these news reports, they're actors, and a lot of them, if you ever meet them, they're actors. They are people who take acting classes, and they project well on TV, and they're doing anything and everything in their power to get on television any way they can.
I've got to ask John's opinion. Are they just actors, or do they care about the stories they cover?
I'm not sure if those are mutually exclusive. I think it's a little bit of both, but a lot of them are punching their meal tickets. They want to get on TV any way they can.
Simon, I don't have a problem if they are actors. I want to watch an entertaining, thought-provoking program. That's what I would strive for. And if it takes a little stick, I'm all for it. I don't want to watch someone just regurgitating the news. I want it to be entertaining.
But should the news be slanted?
It's always going to be slanted. That's my point. People have people go in with biases. You talk about Bill Clinton. This is something that is ironic, Simon, and I'm sure you've seen it. The only reason the press protected him and any other Democrat is because they agreed with his ideology. He brought into all the tenets of liberal leftist theology. And as a result, everything else he did was irrelevant, so he was given a pass, carte blanche, if you will, even though he didn't treat women well, the feminists embraced him because he agreed with their policy. So he was given carte blanche to treat women as his own personal sperm receptacles. They don't care about anything else except lockstep agreement conformity. Like Sam says, you go to these schools and you're not permitted to remove that hermetically sealed wrapper from your brain or they'll flunk you out. And that's just the way it is. So I will always support the people who are in the minority and keep an eye on the government and try to make the news entertaining.
Oh, you're talking about the GOP and Fox News.
You don't even watch it. So they're
yes,
not GOP.
I do.
A lot of them are libertarians, and they have a lot of liberals on. Rarely do they just have a conservative on. But
John,
people who don't watch it read these other articles and think it's all GOP. But they criticize the GOP as much as anyone when they disagree, because that's what entertainment is. No one wants to watch a show where everyone's in agreement. And Sam,
hey,
my favorite show for sports, First Take, ESPN, Skip Bayless, and Stephen A. Smith. If that's not confrontational, I don't know what is.
One of my favorite shows.
ESPN, I've seen better writing, better sports, better reporting, better investigative reporting in Sports Illustrated over many, many subjects that I've ever had in Time, Newsweek, that's why Newsweek's dying, and some other other things. I think because there is so much interest in sports, professional sports, there is so much sports out there, and obviously a lot of bad things or good things happen. But the reporting are much better. It is actual. The reporting on Sports Illustrated did a great story on concussions in football. You would think that the New York Times would have done it. It was really well done and educational. It was an incredible story about Jim McMahon, who was my age, and what he's going through right now. And I couldn't believe it because he's a guy who was if you guys remember him from the Bears in 1986, McMahon, and he took on and now he's got dementia and. It was just an amazing story. The reporting was fabulous. It was well-written and whatnot. And ESPN, you're right. You guys are right about that. But, John, I go back. When I was watching the presidential election, I was watching all the news with my wife. And I like O'Reilly, okay? I didn't like him at first, but he's an egomaniac. And then as he got into it, he did have other guests on, other opinions and whatnot. But I got to tell you, John, Peter's 100% right. It all came down to still, no matter what, had to plug his effing books.
That money all goes to charity. And also, Simon, some advice for you. If you want to be a journalist, actually watch the programs you're going to criticize. Don't just take it from Media Matters and the Huffington Post excerpts. Sit down and watch it for a little bit.
No, I read the Huffington Post, and some of that's full of crap, too, but there's some good things there, too.
They just take excerpts from, Media Matters and the Huffington Post and run with it. And that you could do that on any cable network. But
John,
I'm telling you, if you watch it over time, you'll be surprised at how fair and balanced they are.
John, I gave myself... a brain transplant, or maybe I disemboweled myself with a plastic butter knife. I watched Fox News for 3 hours straight, and at the end of it, I was going, no, but this can't be real.
Well, I don't know what shows you watched, but I have the same. The other networks have the same effect on me. So you can imagine if Fox wouldn't exist, I wouldn't even watch TV.
Well, no, John, what we should have, the ultimate show would be if Sean Hannity and Rachel Maddow on the same show together.
I couldn't watch it.
Well, then you'd have that, because that's what both are. I mean, Hannity, you can't tell Hannity's not fair and balanced. Give me a break. Or some of these other ones. I mean, I get Lavallee a little bit better, but of that. And I do think when I did watch Fox during this presidential election and CNN and MSNBC, I will give you credit, John. Fox did always bring in a James Carville. They always tried to bring in the opposing
right.
viewpoint.
Right.
I will give you that. I saw very a little bit less on CNN. And as a matter of fact, everyone just in the middle of the world with CNN. They stuck in neutral. But no way it ever happened on MSNBC. There was no way. I very rarely saw them bring someone from the opposing viewpoint on. I'm not saying they didn't. I never saw it.
Fox always does, right?
Fox always seemed to do it, and I never watched Hannity that much because he's too far to the right. I mean, he's you know, his idea of a great threesome would be him, Carl Rove, and Dick Morris together.
Well, he has a lot of liberals on his show.
I don't know how to watch it. I can't. But if Fox was really, I mean, you know, look what they did though, John. They hooked, they tied. You got to be realist too. I mean, they hooked their fangs into Carl Rove and Dick Morris and the others as their gurus. And they were wrong. I mean, if they were businessmen, they'd be fired for how bad wrong they were about the selection. They'd be gone.
They got the election wrong, certain pundits.
Yeah,
like
but where
are
they getting their data? How can you have any faith? Wait a minute. They got the election wrong. They have million-dollar staff, million-dollar research, all sorts of stuff on polling.
I'm talking about pundits. So what?
Well, I mean, you're talking, they got
it
really wrong.
Those are entertainment. I'm much more concerned when Obama gets out there and says, Obamacare is going to reduce medical costs. I find
well,
that a lot
talk about, if you want to talk about entertainment, let's right. watch the Western Channel. That's more entertaining to me than Fox, NBC, or CSN, or any of them. I'd rather watch the Western Channel. Have
right,
general travel.
That's why we have a remote.
You know, when you talk about news trying to make predictions about things like presidential elections and things like that, I can't help but get the feeling that they're not trying to predict the outcome at all. I think they're actually trying to affect it. And I think that they're trying as hard as they can to actually persuade voters to vote the way they want them to. And I believe that happens. That's my own personal belief. I don't think they're trying to make an objective appraisal of electoral data sometimes. I think sometimes they're trying to encourage voters to get out there and vote for the candidates that they want them to.
Or Peter, how about just stay engaged? If one party thinks they're going to lose, their supporters will become disengaged and probably not watch political shows. So how about that aspect?
It sounds to me like you just admitted what I suspected is going on.
I don't disagree with that, but I don't think it's to alter the election. I think it's more so to keep people engaged and watch the show.
Okay. Well,
what it's really about is to get their stupid political ads and the billions of dollars on Fox or on their affiliates or MSNBC or ABC, CBS. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, I think there's some of that going on, certainly, but I really like John's comment because John kind of acknowledges what I've suspected, which is that, you know, you call it keeping the voters engaged. What you're saying is, if you tell the voters the truth, which is they're going to get hammered at the polls, then the voters who are on the losing side aren't going to come out and vote. And if you keep them engaged, they'll at least come out and vote. So however you slice it, they're trying to affirmatively, affect the election. And Sam's point about the money end is true. I just don't know how cognizant some of these people are of it, other than the fact that whatever they do individually affects their job performance, and they all want to keep their jobs any way they can, and they'll do anything they can to promote and keep their jobs.
Okay. I think we've hammered the press enough.
Well, I don't think we've even begun to scratch the surface, but it's probably time to move on. But I think that's a fascinating topic.
You didn't hammer the press. You hammered Fox.
I didn't. I think they all do it.
Although, okay. John, I do like Fox's NFL football team better. I will give you that.
And
Kelly,
also,
Kelly
Fox
Bradshaw,
is a
Fox,
tremendous channel.
Bradshaw, I love Bradshaw as the studio host. I will give you that.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the infamous fiscal cliff. You know, right after the election, both sides seem to be playing nice. Yeah, let's get together. Let's deal with this situation. But what I'm seeing is that Washington has returned to the status quo, otherwise known as absolute gridlock. Is there a solution to the fiscal cliff? John, I'll pick on you because I know what your comment's going to be.
Hold on, Simon. Let me get a sip of a Big Gulp here. for your listeners' edification, the combination of Dr. Pepper and Snickers explodes like a symphony from Beethoven on your palate.
Oh, I want to put that on a T-shirt or a bumper sticker. That's awesome.
Like that, huh, Peter?
Oh, I love it. It reminds me of a commercial. What is it, a commercial for something where they're talking about their taste buds exploding? That's awesome. You want to market that or trademark it or something. That's great.
Or Simon, so you can understand Slash on a guitar solo.
Yes.
Remember Slash, Guns N' Roses?
Yes.
Okay. The fiscal cliff. I told you my opinion of it. Sounds like a porn star from the 70s. And I think it's just another excuse for Obama and Geithner to take it down to the last minute, panic the masses, and tell them if the debt ceiling isn't extended, you're not going to get your checks and food stamps in the mail. It's a canard.
Oh, I think it's a little more far-reaching than that.
I figured you would.
Yeah.
Probably, I've been around too long. I don't fall for this anymore.
All right. There's going to be huge tax hikes and huge slashes in spending, particularly defense. And,
you're killing me, Simon.
it slashes in the defense budget, quite honestly, doesn't bother me one iota. But, I mean, are they going to come to an agreement?
I'm sure they will. It'll be down to the last minute. That's why Obama's going on vacation, and they'll try to instill panic in the masses, and people will say, oh, you got to get something done. And we'll all end up paying higher taxes, and nothing will get cut.
Okay. Now, as I recall, the Republicans don't want higher taxes, and that they're very much against cutting anything.
Are you asking me, Simon?
Yeah.
I think it's the circus is in town. They're going to come down to a last-minute deal again, like they always do, and extend the debt limit, and I think that's what all this is about.
Okay, so this has nothing at all to do with the, the quote, middle class.
It's everything about the middle class. It's being destroyed, slowly but surely, like me on this program.
John, I think you're thriving on this program. I think this is great.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that, Peter, because a few of my friends have suggested I should have a show on Fox.
I think you should.
I think you should be the lead-in for Rush Limbaugh, John.
I think you should have a segment called John Perry's Snickers and Big Gulps. That's what I think you should have with your observations of the day. I think it would be great. I think you'd be awesome. And I do mean what I said earlier. I think you've got nearly half the country is an audience that would love to hear from you.
Not even close, but Simon, you could be my Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, Lord.
Boy, how many Snickers have you had? You're in real form today. You've been one-lining us to death here. can I weigh in on the fiscal cliff?
Please.
Certainly.
Thanks. Okay. I John brings a good point up that Obama, well, first of all, if Timmy Gutter told me day was light and night was dark, I'd go outside and check to see. I wouldn't believe anything that guy has to say. The quicker he gets out of the Treasury, the better America will be. I don't know who Obama's going to pick. I don't know who Goldman Sachs is going to pick, but he'll be better than Timmy Geithner. Anyway, we still got, I do think John's right, and that the ultimate thing of the Obama administration is to get that debt ceiling raised. No question about it. But I don't think the big question is Boehner cannot keep in line like 70 House Republicans who were all elected 2 years ago, the Tea Party Republicans or whatever they call themselves. And they refuse to go along with anything other than no taxes and straight spending cuts. They won't compromise at all. So I think we're going to actually hit this. And lots of bad things are going to happen, and then they're going to get this shit together. But we have to hit a rock bottom that's going to be forced upon us. Who gets blamed for it? I do not know. But I think America is going to have to hit a little rock bottom in the month of December and January in order for it to move forward because of these. Everyone seems to be. Guy just said today, he goes, everybody over makes $250,000 is going to pay taxes. And it's just not that simple. If you know people who make over that type of money, I know a few people, not myself, of course, and they told me how their taxes are going to go up all over the place. And, they're going to start selling and dumping and not investing and not giving money to charities and this and this. It's going to have a ripple effect. And they're going to hide their money because they can afford to. And things, the stock market's kind of crash a little, and the housing market still isn't recovering. Despite what these people say, there's still foreclosures happening left and right. That's never been solved. And I think, one last thing, and I'm going to go. The one thing that scared the hell out of me in the Obama plan was a $50 billion stimulus package they want. And when I see that, I there's no way I could support that based upon how the last stimulus package can do anything except for a few people at Solandra and other well-connected people, and that scares me.
Right.
$50 billion more in stimulus money scares the hell out of me.
Okay, Sam, you're a small business owner. Big business in Youngstown.
No.
I mean, aren't you scared? Because if this calamity happens, it's going to affect you, I'm sure.
That's why I spent the last couple of years paying off all my debts, to be debt-free. You could just see that this is going to come, and that the less debt you have, the better off you're going to be. I think everyone knows that. I think the number one enemy facing the United States of America and the world economy is debt and more debt. And until we do something about that, and it doesn't matter how well our economy starts to grow, if we keep borrowing money on this credit card and all the money that's coming into the government from the 1% to 2% to 3%, all of us pay taxes, it's not going to be enough to cut just another cut to debt. So inevitably, if we're just paying the interest on the debt, we're not even paying the principal, how the hell are we going to pay for defense? How the hell are we going to pay for wars? How the hell are we going to pay for food stamps, as John pointed out? How about the pensions, Social Security? There's no money left. We've got to do something about this debt, but they keep kicking the can down the road. And then the Republicans come up, no defense cuts. The Democrats say no cuts to entitlements. But let's just raise the debt ceiling and keep on going.
And, you know, you talked about the gift that keeps on giving, the American taxpayer. It, you know, not such enough because the infrastructure's not being done. And when I hear, like I said, you know, $50 billion for more stimulus packages, how does that get people, you know, the same old people benefit from that money? If it doesn't create jobs, it doesn't create wealth, it just benefits pork barrel politics for the president, for certain senators, for certain congresspeople, and certain people who contributed to their campaigns. And it's not doing anything to attack the debt.
Hey, Sam, I have a message to GSA and all the other government agencies for next year. Party!
Well, but you know, John, you know that aspect. But and I understand some of the Republicans, and I know that some Democrats who feel the same way too. That they got to do something about this debt. But I think they're the vocal minority. But a lot of these people, Simon, you talked about the status quo, and I think we all agree the status quo is about, you know, money's right now to get back. You know, they want to name. They all have their little pet projects. They all bring the bacon home, as they say, to get reelected. The bulk of them got reelected. I think only five didn't get reelected. And they got to reward. They got to reward their campaign contributors. And they bring all this money back to these universities for not my favorite, guaranteed student loans that jack up the prices of tuition. Then the politicians give oodles of money back to these universities to do research. And it's like nothing ever happens except the cost of tuition go up and up. I don't know if anybody's seen the student loan default rate lately.
Yeah, I saw it, and they won't be able to find a job to pay it back.
Well, exactly. It's bad, and it's going to get worse. And I really think we have to hit rock bottom as a collective nation financially, just as many people in businesses that we all know, our own families and personal people. I mean, how much can you live off your credit card, Peter? Without any other income coming in, how much can you borrow? How much, Simon, can you or John and me? I can only go so high, and then that's it. I'm done. I'm tapped out if I don't pay my bill. And then I'm really screwed when I just stop paying the minimum amount too, and that's what people have to realize, but they don't. They just think it's going to keep manna from the heaven, and it needs to stop. And up to this country can get back to investing in its infrastructure and real jobs, better at food, energy, and all that stuff that we're there for, and creating jobs. But how do you create jobs if it's just $50 billion in stimulus money? And then what I really hate the most about, because I've been a victim of it myself, is when your government starts picking the winners and losers. And that's one of my biggest criticisms about the Obama administration's first term, is that all the oodles and oodles of money, stimulus money, cash for clunkers, you name it, they had it. They just picked winners and losers. And they didn't care. Because when Obama and all these people retire, they all live off us for the rest of their lives. They live like kings and queens. The ones who've lost their elections, they're all working on K Street right now, probably from January 2nd. They'll be high-paid lobbyists for the big firms, and we'll get screwed. So maybe the fiscal cliff is the thing that needs to happen for America to wake up, and because we can't keep on going the way we're going. I'll let you guys talk now.
Don't get your hopes up, Sam.
Sam, the Browns are winning 10-0.
No way.
Hey, what's the weather like? Is it about to be bad there, I heard?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the scoreboard on my computer.
You're listening to me talk. You're watching the scoreboard. I'm so disappointed.
Oh, Sam, I was listening intently to every word you said, just as I always do. And each sentence conjured up a new thought and a new idea, but they all get piled up. I don't know. There's so many thoughts that come to mind. We talk about the debt crisis, and it's a worldwide debt crisis. Sometimes, all I can think of in my business, when you get, in the legal business, we hear about people, and we hear this all the time, they get so deeply in debt, there's no way they can get out. There's no way they can get out, and there's one remedy, bankruptcy. And it seems to me that all the big companies in America and arguably all over the world have been basically declaring bankruptcy informally and informally for the last, 5 to 10 years.
And they all do it, and whether they call it a bailout or whether they call it a Chapter 11 or whether they call it this or they call it that, it's the same thing. It's an insolvency. You talk about, you know, the problem with people borrowing and borrowing and borrowing and borrowing, and you're right. It's a huge problem. But we also live in a world where every day these people are bombarded with images of all the things they're supposed to buy and all the things they're supposed to own. And in the next breath, there's another image that says, we'll give you this credit, we'll give you this credit, we'll give you this credit card, we'll give you this credit card, we'll give you this. And so, you know, it's a mixed message that goes out to the great mass out there, you know, buy, 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 consume, consume, consume. And then, you know, everybody's in debt. And another thing you talked about is all the people in government who get us deeply into debt. Well, they don't have to pay it back, and they don't have to be around to pick up the chips when the chips fall and somebody does have to pay it back. I would like to see some great big giant reboot button set all around the world. I would like to just see every debt that can be forgiven, just forgiven all the way around the world, both ways. Everybody gets to wipe it off their books. You know, some debts are obviously accepted, but you know, I'd like to see the whole world declare some sort of giant economic reboot, and let's all start all over and get rid of all this debt, and let's see how quickly we end up in the same mess all over again. I honestly don't know what would happen, but that's what I'd like to see.
How quickly do you think it would be?
Well, you talk about generations. We've talked about it on this program, you know. John says, you know, one generation doesn't remember. And maybe that's true. Maybe the generation that fought to liberate us in wars, you know, remembers those things and the next generation doesn't. Maybe the generation, you know, like me that says, God dang me, let's just do an economic reboot, you know, will remember. I stopped using my credit cards, you know, 5-6 years ago. I basically lock them up and I, you know, I've almost paid off all that crazy debt by now. But will the next generation forget? And what will the next impetus for them to spend and buy and consume be? I don't know. I think it would last a generation, however you define that. What's a generation these days, 20 to 40 years? I don't know.
Hey, Peter, you're obviously not invested in government bonds, I take it.
Not to my knowledge, but I have no idea. I have no idea. Maybe
and
that's
also,
a good investment.
You can forget about selling a government bond if you do that.
Well, fine. Who cares?
Man, he would be very mad at me if I didn't say there is, in the Old Testament, there is a thing called a Day of Jubilee, where after every 7 years, debts are forgiven, believe it or not.
I think we ought to do it. I think
yeah,
it's just
Jubilee,
another version of bankruptcy.
Yep. No,
it's just
right, that's a bankruptcy probably comes from the old, no question about it, but...
You make
Why
a good point, Sam, because you know what the limit is on bankruptcies? It's once every 7 years.
Right. So there you go. I believe every 7 years. So, but I agree with you. I thought when Obama took office in 08, and you know, the whole economic meltdown, I really thought, hey, now's the time to bail out. If you would have paid off all the loans, the homeowners, and they would have, wouldn't the banks have benefited from that? If you went bottom up instead of top bottom, since they were in the mood for giving money, why not bail out everybody's loans? The banks still get their loans paid back. They don't have to go through all these crazy things of foreclosure and this and that. The person gets his house for free. The bank gets the note paid off. Now that person's going to, now they don't have to pay their mortgage anymore. What are they going to do? No, maybe they'll do some rehab. Maybe they'll go and buy a car.
I view secured debt differently. And I'm not so sure if the whole foreclosure crisis isn't basically a better version of this reboot. I view secured debt differently, and I don't like the idea of bailout. I don't like the idea of giving people money. I'm not opposed to forgiving debt to reboot and re-kick the whole system. But as far as homes are concerned, you know, I view that differently. I think the bank, you know, the bank gave a loan, and they secured it with the home. And it's very simple. You pay back the loan, and you keep your home. And if you don't pay back the home, you lose your home. And
yeah, but what about
when you lose
banks,
your home, when you lose your home, your debt is forgiven. You get to walk away from that debt.
But that you could go on for the same sort of thing. But, you know, being one who fought a bank in foreclosure because of their crappy business practices and loaning practices and how they lied and how they lied and how they falsified documents and all that, I disagree with you, Peter. Not in today's
world. Well, good
maybe,
for you. I think you're the exception.
No, maybe years ago. Maybe years ago.
Yeah, I think you're the exception.
You
I think banks did lie and cheat a lot, and good for you for fighting them and winning. But I tend to think that's the exception. I think most
of
these...
absolutely, I'm the exception because most people, how they, you know, one of the things that killed us was the old-fashioned savings and loans. I didn't think they exist anymore, do they? Not that we had, you know, we had that savings and loan crisis because we allowed banks to do all sorts of crazy things. But you know, I'm talking about the Bailey brothers. You know, from the It's a Wonderful Life, where they loaned money for people to buy their homes, and everyone knew what it was, and that was it. You know, they didn't do any other thing crazy with the bank. No mortgage derivatives, no, you know, package things on Wall Street, and all sorts of crazy things that get people into trouble. I mean, millions. You know, all we have on Wall Street now in these banks is they manipulate wealth. They don't create jobs. They manipulate wealth with these hocus pocus ideas, and we all suffer from it. And they know. They're going to get bailed out. We're not going to get bailed out. Main Street's not going to get bailed out. We bail out Wall Street. We live to bail out Wall Street and the big banks and the big corporations and the politicians. That's already been proven, and it's going to happen again. Where is the check and balance on them being the big corporations and Washington, if we're getting into the nuts again?
They'll
be bailed out.
Sam, let's paint a dark picture. You know, something bad goes down with Bill's place. Do you think the feds are going to bail you out? Hell
no. I'm going
to
have to go. That's why I paid off my debt, because then I'd hope that I'd be able to go to say I have equity if I could, and go someplace from there. But, you know, I'm lucky on that aspect, and that's the reason I did it, because, no, I'm not going to get bailed out. I'm going to go find investors, and they're going to take a pound of flesh and... You know, but we'll still be able to stay alive, and, you know, and whatnot. It's just like Peter's law firm or John's investigative or your investigative stuff too. Simon, right? Now, who's going to bail us out if something goes wrong? Nobody.
No.
Nobody.
I haven't seen any letters inviting, me to just cash a check and life is good.
You know, the worst part about the bailouts is those people who run those companies into the ground make fortunes, and they run their companies ragged, and then they get bailouts, and they either walk away or they continue to make fortunes. While Sam, as you point out, everybody else, struggles to basically, survive and do it on their own without help.
Oh, okay. The prime example of that is the latest debacle with Hostess. All right.
Will you?
18,500 people lose their jobs. But guess what? You know, 19 executives get huge bonuses. Whoa, what's wrong with this picture?
It's terrible. It happens all the time. And it's just awful. It's because the people who are in control of all these enterprises, whether you call it big business or big government or whatever it is, that they can't help dealing in self-interest, and they don't have to foot the bill. And it's just, it's sickening. I don't know how you stop it. I don't think there's any way to stop it.
John, you must be just sick over the Hostess deal. I mean, no Twinkies, no ho-hos. I mean, you know.
Yeah, luckily I stocked up, Simon, and I can still have my favorite shake for a while. Whole milk and 4 Twinkies.
I'd rather have a Dr. Pepper and a Snickers bar.
I'm going to try that. Now, John, do you use a blender?
Yeah. You throw 4 Twinkies and a couple cups of milk in and some ice cream if you want it cold.
Okay. Sounds good.
Simon, it goes down smooth, let me tell you.
Well, I'll bet you it goes down smooth.
Yeah, how it comes out is what I'm worried about.
The worst part is I don't think it comes out. That's the worst part.
Well, yeah, actually it does. All it takes is listening to Simon, because that induces uncontrollable flatulence.
No. I think it's all made of chemicals that dissolve into the various parts of your anatomy. That's my theory.
Okay. We're running a little short on time, but there's a couple of other issues that I would like your comments on. Susan Rice, she extended an olive branch to the Republicans this week, and they used it to spank her bottom. She hasn't even been nominated for the position. But, boy, the GOP just seemed to be dead set against her. Why? John?
Well, Simon, I said, I think a couple weeks ago, I was ahead of the curve on this. I said her nomination, when it is brought up, should be confirmed expeditiously and forthwith, because to me she's the ideal candidate to represent the values of the administration. She's capable of reciting talking points, whether they be erroneous and spoon-fed, and she's able to do it eloquently and with conviction. However, absent thoughtful reflection and conscience, and I'm sure the world pays attention to this. And to me, she's like everybody in that administration, an effective, well-oiled automaton, just nothing more than a marionette. And I'm sure that inspires confidence in our friends and foes around the world. So why not? Let him have who he wants. Who really cares?
Woohoo! That was rather ugly.
And also, Simon, if you criticize any Democrat, they can just call you a racist or a sexist.
Okay. Sam, any comments on Susan Rice?
I think, you know, that's who Obama wants in. He quotes, I mean, John, I'm a little bit different to you. I don't like the fact, but Obama did get a mandate. I don't like it. But he did, and I have to accept that. And,
but that's who he wants. Who really cares?
I mean, so that's who he wants. They can, they control the Senate. Do I think she's the right person to be it? No, I'm still holding out for the curveball that he picked John Kerry to be Secretary of State. I do believe that, we talked about this, about how the Arab world, which is right now just a giant powder keg of TNT ready to go up, hates women, look down upon women, spits on women. I think it'd be better for right now if a man, I don't mean to be a sexist comment, but based upon how the Middle East is, that we'd be better off with a man as a Secretary of State. And
well,
I hope Obama picks Kerry.
Okay. Try this on for size. How about if he nominated Mitt Romney?
Why would Romney want that up, Simon? It'd be ridiculous.
John, there is a rumor going around he's supposed to nominate him for Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, I hope he doesn't get involved, because, like I say, they're nothing but marionettes.
Okay, and one final question. The UN this week affords a form of recognition to Palestine. The votes, 138 countries said yes, 41 abstained, 9 said no, and the no's included US, Israel, and Canada. Not much surprise there. What are we going to do with Palestine?
Palestine?
Oh, I hear a lot of heavy sighs.
Peter, you haven't talked in a while.
Well, you know, if the world wants to recognize Palestine as a state, then the world could recognize Palestine as a state. You know, if that's what the world wants to do, then that's what the world will want to do. You know, we can't fight it. We can't, you know, pretend it's not happening. If somebody wants to have a club at school, they can have a club at school. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. And we'll do whatever we continue to do, just like we've always done. And, you know, I don't know what else to say about it other than that.
Sam, I'm pretty certain that you have some strong views on this subject.
I was kind of surprised the Obama administration couldn't stop us from even coming up to a vote. They did before the election, wink, wink, nod, nod, but they weren't able to do it after the election. I know the beginning of the summer this was an issue. Obviously, it isn't anymore. But they did vote against it, and I applaud them for that. But what I know is going to happen come January after the lame duck session is over, aid to Palestine is going to get cut. You watch how the United States starts cutting aid to Palestine because the Palestinians, excuse me, because of the Hamas and whatnot. There's going to be a major change in foreign policy coming to the Middle East, where you will not see, especially with the money being so tight, where you'll be seeing all these terrorist nations that poke their fingers in our eyes, most of them in the Middle East, getting as much money as they have been. I think that's going to happen, not so much by the administration wanting it to, but the whole cold fact of reality is there's not that much money, and there's a lot of people pissed off about our foreign policy and how we're spending money.
Okay. Our foreign policy, it seems to be to give money to just about everyone that holds their hands out, apart from bar owners and lawyers and security firm owners and poor little website owners. I mean, but you know, they happily give it out to foreign countries. I see why. You know, I'm not suggesting that the U.S. becomes insular and isolated, but boy, it pisses me off. You know, we've got, you know, hungry and, you know, people without houses, people without jobs. Why the hell do we keep giving money to any of these people? And none of them are like us. And I'm not sure Israel likes us. But they just like the money and the arms. Ooh. Silence. Anyone?
No, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I don't know why we do half the things that we do. But I'm pretty sure at some level there's a rational reason behind it. And my reason always seems to be somebody's making money off of it. It's not me. You know, if you want to, we always say, if you want to understand something, follow the money. Where it goes, who gets it, who benefits from it. You know, who benefits from it, and somebody's benefiting. Otherwise, these things wouldn't happen.
Right. How about you, Sam? You got me?
I just think that there's, you know, like I said, the economic realities are going to hit that. They're going to see. Unless the debt ceiling gets raised and they kick the can down the road, which is quite a possibility. I mean, we've seen this movie over and over again. It's the same repeat. That there will be some sort of change, and everyone with the handout getting money. It's got to stop. Like you said, there's better things to do with it. But sometimes, you know, the ones
you know, like we talked earlier, the people in power just don't give a shit about that. They care about our tax dollars, but they don't give a shit about the return on the investment for the average guy, the average small business person, or whatnot. We're not getting a return. You know, I don't even know what the United States return on the investment is, except for dead bodies and lots of, you know, things of that nature across the country. I mean, I know there was another suicide attack by the Taliban on a base in today, and it barely got much news. And I don't know how many Americans got hurt or killed. I'm sure there were some. It was a big base on the eastern part of Afghanistan. And, you know, we're still not pulling out there to 2014. And, you know, and God knows how much money's been wasted there, and not just in lives and whatnot, but just giving money to politicians that everyone says the president of Afghanistan would be a great United States senator because he's so corrupt. He knows how to do things. But I don't know. I hope it changes. That's all I could, you know, because it needs to change, and it would be a better thing if it did would change. But maybe with Christmas and Hanukkah coming, I'll get my wish.
John, we seem to be giving stimulus packages to everyone. Should we be doing this?
You mean foreign countries?
Yeah.
Yeah, I, as I've said on this program many times, I'm promoting peace and freedom around the world. And when Obama told Mubarak to get out of Dodge, this scenario is entirely predictable. And essentially, Simon, my attitude is this. If you can export McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken, blue jeans, and rock and roll music, it'll ultimately benefit us in the end.
Fine, but we don't need to pay for the Snickers bars and the transport. That they can pay for it themselves.
I'm very willing to pay for startup fees.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Someone's got to
okay.
make some money in this economy, Simon.
Oh, man. Okay, we're out of time. I do want to thank you all for taking part today. And as normal, going to do a quick round the table ending thoughts. I'm going to start with Peter Haven because he's the least crazy of us.
The least crazy person is sitting here looking back fondly at all the memories of the Hostess stuff I used to eat growing up, and I was just trying to rattle through in my brain all the things that Hostess made that I used to eat, and all I can say is I'm personally not going to miss any of that, and I think we'll be healthier without it, and I think it's a sign of you know, these economic times that we talk about. We have to get back to basics and do the things that we've talked about today. Eliminate debt, concentrate on building fundamental things, and try to keep moving forward. So God bless ding-dongs and ho-hos. May they rest in peace.
Okay. I'm going to leave the wild man to last. Next up would be Sam.
First of all, Peter, the Raiders have kicked a field goal. It's 10-3 at halftime. Browns, I may get my 2-in-a-row wish. Manny, wherever you are, if you're listening, come back. We need you. That's number one. I think it's been a great show, far-ranging, from as far-ranging as John being a cheerleader for Fox News and Simon being a cheerleader for CNBC. That's as far as the gamut we went. This holiday season, I hope everybody gets what they want, and I hope it's not something bad. I hope it's America gets its act together and the new leadership corporate leadership, media leadership, you know, you name it, all gets together and, you know, stops kicking the can down the road and, you know, comes up. You know, I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel. It's been there. You know, we have a great thing called the Constitution, and people just start adhering to it. And, just, you know, and in the spirit of the holidays, let's just you know, let's just get it done and get it together so everyone can have a better life. I mean, I know if I was in a position of power, I'd like to think, I would sure as hell would like to think that I would do the right thing for everybody, just my own special friends and special interests and whatnot. And we need more of that and less selfishness and greed around.
So you would be all for a Christmas tree stimulus package?
I would be for a Christmas tree stimulus. I've always said this since the first Wall Street bailout. Screw Wall Street. Bail everybody out from the bottom up. I think it would have been better. And going back to what Peter talked about, the seven-year jubilee, the reboot button. Something's got to happen. Well, you know, when my parents used to tell me and my grandparents that when the Great Depression hit, Roosevelt came in, they had to do something. What had happened wasn't working. There were many reasons why. He did do something. You know, so you can't, and all throughout history, you can point to all these things, economic calamities, wars and whatnot. Those countries and people that responded to the challenge and did something new because what the status quo wasn't working flourished. And we're still in this first, you know, I hate that, you know, cliche, status quo, but I'm going to use it. That's what we're in. We need to get out of it. We need to do, you know, it's not working. You know, let's change something new. You know, change something new. And I'd love to see that. So, yes, I'm for a Hanukkah bush and Christmas tree stimulus package.
Perfect. Okay. And the infamous John.
Simon, I wanted to pay tribute to Warren Buffett. So do I have a couple minutes?
Sure.
All right. The Oracle of Omaha, who's resembling Mr. Magoo more and more each day, and not just facially. He's the king of crony capitalism, insider deal, and gaming the system. And I saw him on Fox recently. He recently deigned to condescend and presume to speak for us, the middle class, and our apparent morale problem. I'm reminded of the robber barons 100 years ago, which Manny so ably vilifies Albert Nobel and Andrew Carnegie, who after decades of being avid merchants of death in the munitions and steel industries, attempted to remove the stain of blood on their hands by creating, you know, the Nobel Prize and the Carnegie endowments. For people who are interested, Carnegie in his years in steel, one worker a day, on average, died in his steel plants. And I think it was 1893, they had the steel protest, the workers in Homestead, Pennsylvania.
Right down the street from me.
And Pinkerton agents were hired by Carnegie. Yeah, Homestead, Sam, if that's by you,
yep.
You get up.
Right.
And he hired Pinkerton agents, and they fired into the crowd of unarmed protesters because they wouldn't leave the plant, killing about a dozen of them and probably wounding hundreds. And that's all erased now in history. So I think Buffett's trying to do the same thing with his image. And to me, it's just another example of how easily people are manipulated, influenced, and distorted. The Oracle, people probably don't know this, Sam, you might, purchase several failing companies for pennies on the dollar just prior to the stimulus package funds being distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, the companies and their subsidiaries received billions of taxpayer money in the bailout. He made billions, not through, which Simon decries, laissez-faire capitalism, but rather political connections. I have a plea. Oracle, we know you have the ablest attorneys and accountants money can buy, and you'll pay as much taxes as your heart desires. Please start by returning a few billion taxpayer dollars received through the stimulus package. Give the little guy a chance to compete in the marketplace fairly. That would greatly improve our morale.
Well,
thanks for your time, Simon.
Yeah, I love it. John, that was actually fairly cogent stuff.
Oh, it was really good.
It's due to the Snickers and Dr. Pepper.
Right.
What does it do? It's the Beethoven to your Pele. What was that line again? I got to remember that.
It explodes like a symphony from Beethoven on your palate.
Oh, I love that. That's it. I got to write that down. Okay.
Okay. I want to thank you all for taking part today. It was a great show, and I do hope you'll be with us next week. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, safe and healthy, albeit might involve Snickers week. Till next time, goodbye.
Bring back Jan, Simon.